As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas. Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of 5-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 5-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you 5-star sleep, the Ultra Comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 5-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 5-star reviews. So when you're ready to score 5-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Good morning. I'm Jane Pauley, and this is Sunday Morning. The 79th Annual Tony Awards are tonight here on CBS, live from Radio City Music Hall. Of course, as home to Broadway, New York is always a fitting host for the Tonys. And tonight, even more so, as one of the leading nominees is largely set in New York, the musical Ragtime. Based on the best-selling novel by E.L. Doctorow, it's up for 11 awards. This morning, Mo Rocca explores why it's resonating so deeply with today's audiences.
The characters of the musical epic Ragtime may come from different worlds, but they're all pursuing the American dream. The Tony-nominated stars of the show can relate.
We have all led shows for 20 years, and so I think it's a rare thing when people that have had this much experience land on a stage together. That's part of the specialness of this production.
Ahead on Sunday Morning, the American saga of Ragtime.
For decades, in movies like Close Encounters of the Third Kind and E.T., Steven Spielberg has explored the possibility of alien life. As he'll discuss with our Ben Mankiewicz, Spielberg's new film follows in that rich tradition.
I know you.
The movie, for me, is a summation of my life in science fiction.
Disclosure Day tells the story Steven Spielberg has wanted to tell for decades.
Of course, it's not science. It's a fiction. It's a movie.
Well, it's a movie, and the movie is built on a foundation of truth, in my humble opinion.
Whatever happens, don't you let go.
A Close Encounter with Steven Spielberg, later on Sunday Morning.
That familiar advice, go to college, get a job, has been put to the test quite a bit lately. For many recent grads, the job search is now often defined by rejection and uncertainty. David Pogue helps us explore why.
For young people seeking their first jobs, it's a tough world out there.
How many applications would you say you've submitted so far?
I would say 50, close to 100.
You definitely feel defeated.
This is a deer in the headlights moment for U.S. employers. They're uncertain, partly about AI. They don't know how it's going to affect their hiring needs.
Coming up on Sunday Morning, the disappearing entry-level job.
Serena Altschul discovers the sweeter side of life with some help from the nation's very first honey sommelier. Tracy Smith gets the facts on GLP-1s, the hugely popular weight loss and diabetes drugs that could be effective treating other medical problems as well. Plus, Alina Cho tours an exhibit fit for a queen, a collection of Queen Elizabeth's royal wardrobe on display at Buckingham Palace, and more as we give our regards to Broadway on this Sunday morning for the 7th of June, 2026. And we'll be back after this. To begin this morning, close up on one of tonight's leading contenders at the Tony Awards, the musical Ragtime. Here's Mo Rocca.
Well, I mean, the Gilded Age had a lot of problems, but they did know how to build.
Yeah, they did. They did. They really did. Beautiful.
For Tony Award nominees Brandon Uranowitz, Casey Levy, and Joshua Henry, the Morgan Library, built by financier J.P. Morgan at the turn of the 20th century, represents the grandeur of the Gilded Age.
Do you all think that this period in American history lends itself especially to drama?
Yeah. There was just like a lot of change happening.
Yeah.
And I think with any change comes conflict, and with conflict comes drama.
That drama is what drives the revival of the musical in which the three star, Ragtime.
The people called it Ragtime. Ragtime.
For people who don't know the show, what do you tell them Ragtime is about?
I would say it's about three distinct groups of people coming together in America and the way that in their individual pursuit of the American dream for themselves, the way it changes someone else's pursuit of their American dream.
We can never go back to before.
Pursuing their American dreams are Mother, played by Levy, a wealthy suburban matriarch.
Make them hear you.
Whole House Walker, played by Henry, a successful ragtime pianist.
And gliding far away.
And Tate, played by Uranowitz, an immigrant from Eastern Europe.
We'll go down south, and see your people.
The original production, starring Brian Stokes Mitchell and Audra McDonald, opened in 1998. Sunday Morning interviewed its creators, including the late writer Terrence McNally.
This show is very much a return to the tradition of people singing about big emotions, primary emotions. It's a very noble show. It's a big story. It says, here's my heart.
I think that's one of the big successes of this book and this story, is that it catches people at their extremes.
Well, when he is old enough, I will show him America.
At the beginning of the show, Cole House Walker firmly believes in the promise of a future with the woman he loves and their infant son.
One of the heartbreaking aspects of that joyous moment is we're in around 1908,
right.
And you're like, wow, how can this black man and woman be so hopeful about what they don't see?
That hopefulness is conveyed in the show's best-known number, Wheels of a Dream, sung by Henry and Nichelle Lewis.
On the wheels of a
Joshua, were you familiar with Ragtime? Was this sort of on your wish list?
Yeah. Yeah, I, in 2002, when I was at the University of Miami studying musical theater, it was one of the first cast recordings I came across. I remember being in the music library listening to Wheels of a Dream. And I remember thinking, I want to be a part of epic storytelling like that. I want to be one of those performers that makes people feel deep feelings.
Make them hear you when they hear you.
Working with writer Terrence McNally to adapt E.L. Doctorow's novel into a musical were lyricist Lynn Ahrens and composer Stephen Flaherty. While studying at a music conservatory, Flaherty was in a ragtime band.
We had a terrible name. It was very long. It was called the Fleeting Moments Waltz and Quick Step Orchestra.
Ooh, try saying that 10 times.
I know. We played the music of America from 1890 to 1920. So I had all of this music at my disposal in my DNA.
Meanwhile, Ahrens got her start writing for the beloved 1970s educational kids series, Schoolhouse Rock.
We the people, in order to form a more perfect union.
That's Ahrens herself singing the preamble to the Constitution.
Did that get you thinking about America in a way that informed the work on Ragtime?
I'm sure it did. Great American Melting Pot, for instance, you know, my grandmother came from Russia,
A satchel on her knee. My grandfather had his father's cap he brought from Italy.
It talks about the immigrant experience. It's very close to Ragtime in theme in a weird way. It started preparing my heart to talk about those kinds of stories,
Both Ahrens and Flaherty feel that this revival is resonating more deeply with audiences.
We've worked together for so many years, and we've written so many shows, but this one, it's its third time on Broadway, and this one, I think, is the most emotional of all.
You know, the first time around, it got decent reviews. This time around, it's unanimous raves.
Yes.
Is that just about the performances and the direction, or is it maybe about the show? Maybe it was ahead of its time, or what? What is it?
I think it's E, all of the
all
above.
All of the above, absolutely.
I think at this particular time in our country's history, we're about to turn 250 years old. And just to do this particular piece that's about what does it mean to be American, and it really examines that.
Casey Levy and Brandon Uranowitz see parallels to today's world.
I think why Ragtime is having a moment right now. You know, our world and our country, it's very fractured right now. And the themes and the stories and the characters in Ragtime are represented out in the street.
I play a Jewish immigrant from Eastern Europe, but I think so much of the immigration story is speaking to people right now because of the immigration issues happening in our country literally at this moment.
The show was written almost three decades ago and set more than a century before today. But for director Lear de Bessonnet, also a Tony nominee, Ragtime isn't the least bit dated.
Ragtime, for me, allows us to reconnect with our deepest feelings about the actual love that we have for this country and how deeply we want it to achieve the promises that it set out to, even if it has not fully achieved them yet. And that we are still believing in hope that isn't pretending that everything is okay. It's holding the pain, but it's moving forward in hope.
There's never been a better time to get outside and experience the benefits of nature. Discover nearby trails and explore the outdoors with All Trails. Download the free app today and find your outside.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
For our nation's recent college graduates, it's a different, difficult, and demanding new world out there. We asked David Pogue to help us understand just how bad the job market is and what those young job seekers can do to succeed.
For generations, young Americans have heard the same message: go to college, get a job. But lately,
how's the job market for young people right now?
Terrible.
It feels like once you graduate, you know, you're expecting things to just fall into place, and sometimes that's just really not the case.
It definitely hasn't been the case for recent graduates Megan Obetz in Philadelphia, Olivia Bennett in New York, Daniel Fisher in Anchorage, and Michael Sundheim in Minneapolis.
You send tens, hundreds of applications in.
You know, your resume is getting thrown into a pile and AI is basically sorting it through.
The last position that I interviewed for had 300 applicants.
And you're not even hearing back. You can't even get a rejection. You just submit into some kind of void.
It gets to a point where you definitely feel defeated.
There's like no humans involved, as far as I can tell. It's plausible to me that this is some kind of elaborate psychological experiment that's being done on me and my classmates to see, you know, how many applications they can get us to submit before we lose our minds.
They're not imagining it. The unemployment rate among young people is about twice the national average. And 40% of college graduates who are working have taken jobs that don't require a college degree, like temporary and part-time gigs.
People who are trying to look for jobs for the very first time are having a really difficult time of it, the hardest time that they've had in years.
Laura Veldkamp is an economics professor at Columbia Business School.
The trope I keep hearing is that AI has taken all these jobs. How true is that?
There's a little bit of truth to that. The research that's done on this suggests that AI has actually increased the unemployment rate by about 0.1%. So that's 1 in 1,000. But it's definitely not the whole story of what's going on with unemployment.
The real story, she says, is a weak economy.
Measures of uncertainty are at all-time highs recently. And when people are uncertain, they often freeze. Right? So this is a deer in the headlights moment for U.S. employers, where they're uncertain partly about AI. They don't know how it's going to affect their businesses and how it's going to affect their hiring needs. But they're also uncertain about tariffs that have been on again, off again, higher, lower. The third thing that's creating uncertainty is a lot of fluctuation in fuel prices. They've almost doubled in the last few months. And when its price moves around a lot, it creates a lot of uncertainty for the cost of doing business.
More deers and more headlights.
Absolutely.
Is there something in an employer's mind that makes them more likely to crunch the slowdown of incoming employees?
If you're really uncertain about what to do and you freeze, that means I don't want to do something new, like go look for a new person who may or may not work out. And so that tends to be young people.
And to make matters worse,
wages are lower because there's so much demand from potential workers.
Wait, so not only is it harder to find one, but when I get one, it's going to be paying less?
I'm sorry to say yes.
There are certain industries that offer some green shoots of hope. We are going to be pumping jobs into the system.
Laura Fuentes runs human resources for Hilton, which employs 500,000 people. She points out that some fields are hungry for new workers, including healthcare, energy, AI, and hospitality.
Those with the right hustle, the right mindset, are piercing through, and we're able to find them.
The other thing you hear a lot is, I submitted 100 applications, and I just got these AI rejections that I can't even get through.
Yeah, and I do feel for students. I mean, I'm a mom of two kids. They've witnessed that. So play the long game, be patient and persevere, and I'd say open up your aperture. Right, so a lot of kids come out with this, like, I want to be X when I graduate. That first job, it's not your identity and it's not your destination. It's a launching pad, right?
Are you saying, but don't be so picky?
A little bit. Loosen up about the exact job title, the exact pay, the exact thing you will be doing.
Ironically, Part of the problem might be the websites designed to make finding a job easier, like LinkedIn, ZipRecruiter, and Indeed. They've come up with the one-click apply button. This kind of feature lets you blast out your resume to hundreds of listings. As a result, each job opening may get thousands of applications, lowering everyone's chances of getting through. And employers often wind up using AI to evaluate the tsunami of applications.
Laura Fuentes suggests a better way.
As our recruiters lovingly say, don't spray and pray. Find a couple of entry points beyond your recruiter and beyond the online application. Even as a student, your network is likely far broader than you imagine. Your professors, the people you babysat for, friends of the family, keep at it. All you need is that one yes to get in the door.
And sure enough, studies have shown that most jobs are filled through personal connections.
Will you raise your hand if you've heard the advice, forget the job sites, go through a networking channel, someone you know?
But in order to know somebody, you have to know somebody, and you don't always.
And even if you do have a connection, you're not guaranteed anything, which is incredibly disappointing.
After months of searching, Olivia Bennett and Michael Sundheim finally landed jobs through people they'd met, not through job sites. Olivia accepted a job outside her chosen field.
I went to college for international relations and specifically U.S.-China policy. I now work in digital marketing in event production, so it's kind of different.
Megan is still looking for a job in music or marketing. Daniel is still hunting for something in law or political advocacy. Fortunately, the dry spell may be easing.
This month's job report suggests that we've turned the corner and we're starting to see more jobs posted, more entry-level jobs posted for that young people would be highly qualified for. We don't stay frozen forever. Eventually, even amidst all the uncertainty, life must go on, business must proceed, and we're going to need more workers to make that happen.
For recent grads like Daniel Fisher, a turnaround can't come too soon.
I mean, it doesn't matter to me if it's the economy or not, right? Like, it is deeply personal. I really would like to not live with my parents anymore because I need to start my life. I need to, like, have a career.
You say you're in the mood for something sweet. With Serena Altschul, we've got honey on the menu.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the introduction to the sensory analysis of honey. People think, oh, you know, honey lasts forever. That's not the truth.
We'll talk Once or it. Twice a year, Marina Marchese offers a four-day course that's all the buzz out of her barn in Weston, Connecticut.
This is really the ideal way to smell honey.
Think wine school, but for honey.
This is a very intense honey. Coconut, cocoa, vegetal.
Marchese is our country's first honey sommelier, trained to identify and match all kinds of botanical sources, like a terroir.
When my bees visit clover, the honey should be kind of grassy with a note of cinnamon spice. My bees are visiting buckwheat. The honey should be very dark and malty and, you know, very pungent. This honey is a linden honey. Nice. And when you taste, what you do is you put it on your tongue, let it melt, mix it around with some saliva.
And it's crunchy. Oh, I love that.
Yeah, almost
the flavor
have to chew
is totally
it.
Different than the fragrance or the aroma.
She's tasted enough varietals to fill four books. Her latest one, A World Atlas.
Okay, so here, see how that's shiny? That's uncapped nectar.
She learned her craft in Italy, where the country governs a national register of experts. Marchese was the first American to get accredited in 2013.
How seriously do they take their honey there?
Well, they've elevated to a high art. I mean, the same way that wine and olive oil is respected, they've really elevated it.
How much do you think American consumers these days know about honey?
I think very little, unfortunately.
One sticky statistic, Organizations like the Honey Authenticity Network estimate that one-third of the honey traded around the world is adulterated or not entirely pure.
You can mix sugar with honey. You can mix high fructose corn syrup with honey, as long as you put it on the label. When you don't put it on the label, this is considered fraud. Also, it's really difficult for consumers to sort of navigate the world of honey when they go shopping.
Americans consume, on average, 600 million pounds a year, but three-quarters of that is imported from overseas.
It's being shipped over in bulk. It might be a little bit blended. It might get heated. Oh. Different things happen in the process of shipping honey into the U.S. on a commercial level.
That's what I really like about Marina's sensory course, is that it kind of helps you detect those problems.
Concerns over honey fraud is one reason Marchese's class has been attracting all kinds from the industry, including honey judge Monica Sheviak from Texas.
I work with a lot of our local beekeepers, and I get some different varietal sources, and I let my consumers come in and try it, and they're just like, wow, I had no idea honey came in all these colors and flavors and different aromas. So it's really, when you're exposed to it, it's fascinating.
So say I'm going to the farmer's market tomorrow. What should I be looking for?
My best advice is look for flavor, because honey has flavor, whereas sugar and other sweeteners are just sweet.
The lime being stronger flavored, we also have a little bit of a stronger honey, a buckwheat honey.
For years, Chef Frederick Kiefer has been sourcing his honey from Marchese, whose farm is just a short drive from one of his restaurants, Artisan, in Southport, Connecticut.
Here we go. Cooking with honey.
To Chef, honey is more than just a drizzle.
People think honey is just sugar. Honey is also part of a seasoning, and that's how we use that. It's a seasoning just like salt.
That is really extraordinary. It's meant to be paired with this meat. That honey is fantastic.
He is the chef that will say to me, what's in season? What do you have? What's fresh now?
Elevating honey to new culinary heights is what Marina Marchese hopes will one day be of hive mind.
Bees make a 12th of a teaspoon of honey in their entire life. So real honey is rare and precious.
Right. It's liquid gold.
It is liquid gold. It really truly is.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas. Finding the right furniture for my home can be hard, especially when I'm looking for trendy, high-quality pieces that won't break the bank. Luckily, at Bob's Discount Furniture, I can shop the latest styles and customer favorites with tons of 5-star reviews, like Bob's Real Marble Elm Dining Set, which has over 600 5-star reviews, the Copper Radiance Mattress, which over 400 Bob's customers say will give you 5-star sleep, the Ultra Comfy Phantom Reclining Sofa, which boasts over 1,000 5-star reviews, and the customizable modular Bob's Sectional, which not only costs just $250 per piece, but has over 1,700 5-star reviews. So when you're ready to score 5-star style for every room in your home at everyday low prices, listen to the smartest shoppers around and stop in or shop online at Bob's Discount Furniture, where America shops for furniture.
Give my regards
to Broadway.
And now another chapter in the story of these United States. I'm Mo Rocca.
Hello, the gang. At 42nd Street, and I will soon be there.
In 1942, Jimmy Cagney sang and danced his way to an Oscar when he played entertainer George M. Cohan.
To what do you attribute your continued success, Mr. Cohan?
Oh, I'm an ordinary guy who knows what ordinary guys like to see.
In Yankee Doodle Dandy.
I'm a Yankee Doodle Dandy.
Here's Cohan himself singing.
A Yankee Doodle Dandy.
While dramatic performances originated at least 2,500 years ago, historians generally agree that the Broadway musical is an American invention. And George Michael Cohan, actor, composer, playwright, and producer, was one of musical theater's founding fathers. His parents, Irish immigrants who became vaudeville performers, maintained that their son was born on the 4th of July, even though his birth certificate says it was July 3, 1878. Cohan performed with them as an infant and learned to sing and dance.
The Yankee Doodle Dandy comes home. George M. Cohan, actor, songwriter, and playwright.
Known as the man who owned Broadway, Cohan eventually produced more than 50 musicals and published hundreds of popular songs, many of them patriotic standards. Yankee Doodle Boy, You're a Grand Old Flag, and Over There. In 1940, President Franklin D. Roosevelt presented Cohan with the Congressional Gold Medal for uplifting America's morale during World War I.
And if you visit Times Square, you'll see the bronze statue of George M. Cohan, forever giving his regards to the Broadway he helped create.
As medical treatments go, more and more of us have come to see GLP-1s as a game changer. This morning, Tracy Smith begins our series on obesity with a look at the growing potential and questions about those revolutionary drugs.
It's that season again, the most uncovered time of the year. For some, swimsuits can be an issue, but not for Carly Anderson.
I feel like I can be present. I feel like
the former elementary school teacher is now an online influencer whose content celebrates people of all shapes, including her own.
Years and years ago, I started an online community called Just Wear the Suit, and it was really just encouraging women to work on being comfortable where they were. It was really about female empowerment and just feeling at home in our bodies.
But her own body was holding her back. For years, she suffered from chronic inflammation of her joints.
How incapacitating was the joint pain before?
I remember telling my husband, this is what it felt like to be old.
You were struggling?
I would wake up with severe back pain every single morning. It was to the point where I thought, well, I guess this is just life now at 46.
So the medication comes in a vial like this.
Oh, got it.
And these are syringes. Okay.
So after trying practically every remedy out there, Carly's doctor suggested that her inflammation might be helped by an off-label use of a GLP-1.
For you, were GLP-1s kind of a last resort?
100% a last resort. I think as someone that had done so much work myself on feeling at home in the size of my body, I was very resistant. I gave myself the first dose of this medication, and within 3 hours, I started to think, something's happening. And I could literally feel inflammation start to leave my body. It was the most wild experience I think I've ever had in my life. Within 4 or 5 days, I was having joint pain in my back. It was gone. It was gone.
Gone.
Literally gone. And then it just over time
got better and better.
She says the joint pain went away even before she lost 40 pounds. Carly's joined more than 30 million people in the U.S. who are on GLP-1s. The drugs were approved 20 years ago as a treatment for diabetes, until researchers noticed that patients were also losing some pretty significant weight. There are now more than a dozen approved GLP-1 drugs, some in pill form, and there are newer versions on the way.
They're transforming the lives of my patients, their health, every aspect, chasing after grandkids, being able to tie your shoes, being able to wrap a towel around your body.
Dr. Anya Yastreboff is a Yale endocrinologist and author of Enough, a book she co-wrote with Oprah Winfrey about causes and treatments for obesity. Yastreboff says it's still too early to claim victory, but in the U.S., obesity rates appear to be heading downward. And the drugs might be useful in ways that haven't been fully studied yet.
I think over time, what we're going to see is by treating early, by treating obesity, we're going to prevent, mitigate, and treat hundreds of other diseases.
Like high blood pressure.
Like high blood.
Diabetes.
Yes, yes. So in fact, even there are at least 13 types of cancer that are related to obesity. And it's going to take a lot more time and more studies to really understand how treating obesity will impact those types of diseases like cancer. But think about the potential of maybe in the future we'll be preventing those types of diseases, including those
including
types of—
Including cancer.
Yes, including those types of cancer that are obesity related. By treating obesity, if we're impacting obesity and potentially 200 obesity-related diseases and complications, these medicines will save millions of lives.
Like any drug, GLP-1s could have side effects, the most common being gastrointestinal distress. And a small group of patients report experiencing something called anhedonia, nicknamed Ozempic personality.
Welcome back to On the Pen Live. I'm your host, Dave Knapp.
Dave Knapp, founder of the obesity care podcast On the Pen, says when he first started on GLPs, he lost interest in things he used to be obsessed with.
Did you have an issue with Ozempic personality or anhedonia?
It's just that a lot of the things that used to interest me, just I could take or leave. And interestingly enough, the biggest tip off for me was Chicago Cubs baseball, something that I had followed very closely for many, many years. And I realized it's been a couple years since I really followed it at all.
So for you, when you adjusted your medication, did the anhedonia go away?
Yes. I noticed after a few weeks, my head started to clear up. The sun started to shine a little bit brighter. The birds chirped a little bit louder. I noticed that my zest for some of those things started to come back, including Cubs baseball, even though it was just in time for them to hit a big losing streak.
Of course, another issue with these medications is cost. While Medicare and Medicaid will start covering these drugs this summer, many patients on private insurance can't afford a once-a-week shot. That's one of the reasons a doctor at Scripps Clinic in San Diego is studying ways to get around that.
Why'd you decide to do this study?
This is the number one question patients ask me. Do I have
obesity specialist Mitch Bierman found in a very informal study that some of his patients maintained their weight loss even if they spaced their weekly shots out to two or three times a month.
It's not a randomized controlled trial, and in particular, it's not a controlled trial. This is just people's weight, you know, before they started, and then, you know, once they started doing every other week.
So now, if a patient comes to you and says, hey, do I have to be on this for the rest of my life? What do you say?
I tell people that they don't have to be on it every week for the rest of their life. Most people who reach a normal weight on Ozempic or tirzepatide, Zepbound, semaglutide will maintain that weight if they space it out to every other week.
He says he hopes to run a clinical trial in the near future.
I've cut like a minute off my mile. That's pretty significant.
That's a
Anyone
lot.
Anyone who runs knows.
Yes.
That's a lot.
Yes. I would be happy cutting 15 seconds right. off my mile, right. like a minute.
As
off
a distance
mile,
runner, a Carly Anderson may be setting the pace for the future of GLPs. To her, it's not about what she's lost, but what she's gained.
I thought, okay, the worst case scenario is I take this medication for it's a weekly dosage. I take this medication once or twice. I feel awful. I don't like it, and I never take it again. The best case is that future me thanks current me. And I remember saying to someone, what if 6 months from now I look back and say this is the best thing I've done for myself?
So big picture question, how life-changing has this GLP-1 been for you?
It is mind-boggling how different I feel every day, every single day.
E.T., the Extraterrestrial, was a huge hit for director Steven Spielberg back in 1982. Turns out that all these years later, Spielberg is still fascinated by the notion of aliens among us. He's talking with our man in Hollywood, Ben Mankiewicz.
It's one thing to watch Close Encounters of the Third Kind in a theater.
As soon as you saw this, you remember it.
Oh, yeah. It was like 95 degrees in Mobile, Alabama, and like a 80% humidity. I remember that.
Watching it with Steven Spielberg, that's a masterclass.
There's so much information in this, revealed very slowly, very effectively.
Sure that the danger will be over within 72 hours. We've seen the Army here, the Corps of Engineers, and the chemical engineers.
So right there, you say, wait a second, did I see what I think I saw?
Yeah.
And then, and who are you going to watch? You're going to watch the screen, you're going to watch the actor. Rich is great, but you're watching the screen now.
You're watching the screen, yeah.
Close Encounters ends with the arrival of the aliens. Forty-nine years later, Spielberg imagines they never left.
This 79-year terror campaign of lies has to end.
But their presence has been systematically denied, covered up.
What are you gonna do?
Full disclosure to the whole world.
That truth will upend all established order across the entire world.
His new film is Disclosure Day.
Disclosure Day is about how if somebody had the power and if somebody had possession of the entire archive of visual evidence of what's been happening for the last 80 years, what would happen if they decided to do a data dump across the entire world all at once? And the people who are trying to stop that data dump from happening, that is basically the core of this chase movie.
It is part chase flick, part 70s thriller, and part big tech conspiracy, all colliding to make Disclosure Day a sci-fi story for a modern audience.
I don't have to look at a poll. I'm positive our faith in institutions is lower than ever, certainly lower than in the post-Watergate 1970s. Does that make it a better time even to release Disclosure Day, to have buy-in from the audience that such a conspiracy could exist?
Oh yeah, I think I can't speak for the entire audience, but there are certain things that unite us. And one of the things that unites us, one of the places we can find common ground, is our united belief that the extraordinary is possible and the impossible is possible. And I think UAP, UFO, the whole phenomenon is something that everybody across any spectrum, culturally, politically, can agree on.
The cast is led by Emily Blunt, plays a weathercaster in Kansas City.
Good morning, Kansas City. Let's take a look at today.
A meteorologist who inherits sudden gifts, skills that she does not understand.
The movie takes the position of the believers or the curious, the ones that have been deeply affected by this, the Emily Blunt character, she plays Margaret Fairchild. You know, something has happened to her. She has no idea what it is. She has to try to understand why this has upended her life.
Впрочем, у нас никакой идеи не годится. Она разговаривает на эту тему.
Ну, Мэри, предложу, что нам делать, Джексон? Правда, просто...
Stop it! Stop!
What the hell was that?
What do you mean?
Is it Russian or is it Polish or something for like a story?
I'm
was
not
that
following
what you were learning?
Yes, true. We're just talking about it.
And the movie also takes the position of the church.
Why would he make such a vast universe, yet
save it only for us?
What does this do to the fundamental beliefs that many of us have? And is God our God only on this planet? Or is God a God for every system where there's civilization, intelligent life, and even developing life?
This is the 34th feature from a director who altered the Hollywood landscape with blockbusters that electrified us and classic stories that seeped under our skin. As for Disclosure Day, Spielberg calls it a bookend to Close Encounters, but the universal curiosity he expresses in both movies dates all the way back to A Starry Night about 70 years ago.
I was about 5 or 6 years old. I was living in New Jersey. And when your father comes in the bedroom and wakes you up from a sound sleep and puts you in a car, and just my father and me drove through the night, not long. I kept saying, Dad, what is it? What is it? He said, it's a surprise. And he stopped at a big park, and it was the Perseus meteor shower. And that was the beginning of my love affair with the sky.
You'd see it, and what do you imagine? What do you see up there? Where does your mind take you?
I remember how shocked I was, but I also remember seeing these points of light darting across the sky, you know. And I just remember thinking that was one of the most extraordinary things I had ever seen.
He's been exploring the extraordinary ever since, finding it as a boy in science fiction magazines like this one.
We have a moderately competent producer on this piece, and he found one of these.
Oh my God, because that is what my father read, okay? This galaxy, analog, and amazing stories. Those three periodicals. And our bathroom was piled high. You know, on the little behind, right? This high with these magazines.
What started with magazines has gone digital. The 79-year-old Spielberg began shaping the Disclosure Day story on his phone.
In the little notes section of your iPad.
Well, you know, everybody has it, right? We have a notes section.
Yeah.
That's where I wrote it. And then I printed it out and would read it and then go back to my iPad again. I mean, my handwriting is so bad. As I've gotten older, it's gotten so bad I can't read it myself. I used to, when I was much younger, I used to write everything out longhand.
There have been retrieval programs of exotic craft. Interrogation of non-human biologics.
The film is fiction, though Spielberg sort of sees that as a technicality.
Think about this. When the great unknown is actually known by some, but not known by all of us, it's that inequity that got me to write the story for Disclosure Day.
Since Spielberg believes in this version of the great unknown, I felt I had to ask.
Have you ever had any sort of paranormal event in your life? Nothing?
Isn't that terrible?
Yeah.
I deserve a sighting. I need a sighting. I'm an ambassador for these guys and they haven't shown themselves to me. I don't get that.
Yeah, that's a great point. Well, they're listening now, so maybe they'll.
Hope so.
That leads to this seems a crazy question. Yeah. I can't believe I'm asking it, but I'm asking it seriously. Have aliens been here? And do you think they might still be here?
Based on the circumstantial evidence of everything that I've gathered throughout my whole life, everybody I've listened to, and every documentary I've ever watched, and all the testimonies in Congress that I've heard, I absolutely think that they have been here, and they are here, and who knows, maybe they've always been here.
As a woman entrepreneur, you know that every connection counts, whether it's with your customers, your team, or your community. Spectrum Business is here to help you build those connections stronger and faster. Imagine running your business with fast, reliable, fiber-powered internet so you can stay connected to customers, employees, and vendors without having to worry. We know flexibility matters. That's why select Spectrum Business packages come with a 3-year price guarantee, so you can focus on running your business. Plus, enjoy savings on internet, phone, TV, and mobile services when you bundle, all with a 30-day money-back guarantee and no long-term contracts. With Spectrum Business, you get more than just internet. You get support with 100% U.S.-based customer service, real people who understand small business, ready 24/7 to help you stay up and running. Join millions of business owners like you across America who trust Spectrum Business for reliability, speed, and support. Visit spectrum.com/business today to get started. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas. When I'm looking for high-quality furniture that doesn't break the bank, I don't have to settle for subpar styles because I can find everything I need at Bob's Discount Furniture. At Bob's, I can score everyday low prices on pieces that real customers love, like Consumer Reports recommended mattresses, real marble dining sets, and the best-selling modular Bob's sectional, which has over 1,700 five-star reviews. So stock up on five-star style and visit Bob's, where America shops for furniture.
In life, Queen Elizabeth II had a fashion sense all her own. It's been nearly 4 years since the death of the beloved British monarch. Time for a glimpse inside her legendary closet. Here's Alina Cho.
She was in the public eye for nearly a century. From her christening as a newborn princess,
with the scepter in her right hand, and in her left hand, the orb.
To her coronation as queen and her 70-year reign, Queen Elizabeth II lived under a global microscope.
Our societies rest on mutual agreement, on contract, and on consensus.
Her words were carefully chosen. Her wardrobe was, too.
It's been said that her wardrobe was her communication.
I think the Queen used fashion in a really incredible way. She turned diplomatic dressing, if I can call it that, into an art form. She would use color, she would use embellishment, she would use emblems. And all of these things were redolent with meaning.
Cherry blossoms adorned her gown for a trip to Japan. White and green satin for a visit to Pakistan matched that nation's flag. It's all part of a new exhibition, Queen Elizabeth II, Her Life and Style, on view at Buckingham Palace. The show sold out so quickly, it's now been extended until next April.
Did Queen Elizabeth love fashion?
I think she did enjoy fashion. I mean, it's hard to look around at some of these pieces and think that was worn by someone who wasn't interested in clothing. So we're in the King's Gallery here.
Curator Caroline de Guiteau says every detail was considered. Hemlines weighted against the wind. Even the vibrant colors were deliberate.
It was about connecting with people, with audiences, with those that, in some instances, had waited many hours to see her wherever she was, and they would catch a glimpse, a flash of that color, or the hat, of course.
Those hats and matching sets became a staple. Headscarves and tartan skirts were for casual days. And of course, dazzling dresses, most notably her 1953 coronation gown, designed by Norman Hartnell.
What makes that gown so special?
I think it's the combination of the fabric and the embellishment. It's probably Hartnell's masterpiece.
Queen Elizabeth II passes from the Abbey.
The dress is subtly covered in symbols from across the British Commonwealth.
Here you have the lotus flower of India and Pakistan, the maple leaf of Canada, of course, the wattle of Australia, the silver fern of New Zealand, and the protea of South Africa.
What do you think that those decisions about what she wanted on that gown said about how she would reign?
I think it showed that she would want to be inclusive to all the people around the world for whom she was queen. And I think it also is an indication, an early indication, that she could use fashion to communicate with people.
There was something about
the designer Erdem Morley Oglu, the queen
women.
Became a muse thanks to a little known chapter in royal history. The 1958 meeting between the young queen and Duke Ellington. The jazz legend would later compose the Queen's Suite, a piece of music made just for her.
What was it about that meeting that so intrigued you?
I think what was so beautiful about the gesture of Duke Ellington creating this piece of music, it was like a love letter.
We went to Windsor Castle to see the record, the only copy ever pressed.
It's kind of incredible that we're here with the actual letter that Duke Ellington wrote to the Queen.
It's wonderful. This line in particular, please accept this, the product of my most inspired creation. I do hope Your Majesty will enjoy the sounds.
Erdem imagined worlds colliding.
It's this push and pull of a kind of an imaginary conversation.
The result, his spring 2018 collection, including this dress on display at the exhibition.
How do you take this meeting that Queen Elizabeth has with Duke Ellington, and then how does that morph into this?
It's almost taking everything that you know about the person and undoing it, being like kind of very irreverent and playing with it. It's never about like the idea of replicating something, it's kind of the insinuation of something.
You could say the Queen approached dressing in a similar way, with the careful construction of an image, refined over a lifetime.
She never wanted to be a trendsetter, and yet she was.
Exactly that. And I think that's that real dichotomy between she never saw herself as a leader of fashion, but, and yet, she has remained influential.
Thank you for listening. Please join us when our trumpet sounds again next Sunday morning.
Are you really buying a car online on AutoTrader right now?
Really? I can get super specific with dealer listings and see cars based on my budget.
Mom!
You can really have it delivered.
Or pick it up.
Mommy, look!
I think your kid is walking up the slide.
Really?
AutoTrader. Buy your car online. Really?
This is the sound of captivity. This is the sound of rescue. And this is the sound of freedom. Give Armenia's captive bears a second chance by supporting International Animal Rescue. Call 508-826-1083 or search The Great Bear Rescue to learn more.